Your Bibles this morning and turn to, well, lots of different places. But just to get started, Acts chapter 18. There's not just one passage this morning because we're not focusing particularly on a passage as we are on a person. But let's just go there this morning. Acts chapter 18 in our ongoing series that we've entitled Bibleography. Different characters of the scriptures. And this morning, it's not only one character, it's a couple. So I thought I was breaking the mold just a little bit. But whenever you find either of them mentioned, they are both mentioned. Never one. And so we'll talk about that this morning, this couple of the Bible. I don't know if you've been watching the Olympics. I have it on. Sometimes I'll watch it, sometimes I'm not. But a name that I would have never heard of 2 weeks ago, Summer McIntosh, I now know today. It's amazing how just a couple of swims changes your life. For those of you who do not know, she has now, I think, for the first time in Canadian history, won 3 gold medals swimming. So she's now considered, I think, the best female swimmer in the world. A 17-year-old high school student from Toronto, Ontario. Very unassuming young lady, kind of seems to be very well grounded. Her mom was an Olympian. Her sister did something as well. I forget what that was, but they've got some athletic genetics in the family. But it's been kind of a pleasure to watch. And just the remarkable ability of some athletes, whatever the sport may be. And so they get the grandeur, right? They win the gold. They got the medal. But behind the scenes, that person didn't get there by themselves. There are a lot of people in behind that gold medal. No, not necessarily with the physical abilities that she has to swim like a fish, but to help to get her to that stage. Her parents. Any of you who have had children in some sort of extracurricular activity like sports or athletics or whatever it might be, and especially as those kids show some promise and you they advance to some sort of a rep team or something like that, you will know the sacrifice that parents make to have their kids involved, and especially at that kind of a level. For myself, I remember, and I never got to that level, I assure you, but I remember Dad getting up at 5 o'clock on a Tuesday morning to take me to the rink to go to hockey practice. Saturday mornings I was carting Victor out to the soccer games there, wherever they may have been. This is to a much greater degree the sacrifice of parents. Parenting out in itself is a sacrifice. This is at another level. Or their coaches. Day after day after day, that which is put into the lives. A few weeks ago was approached. I'm not sure how it ever got to me, but I was through somebody else who's running an organization, was kind of casting the net into Richmond, and I got an email asking if I might perhaps would be interested in being a chaplain on the Richmond Sockeyes. the hockey team, little junior hockey team here in Richmond, has been around for many years. And as we were talking over coffee, he just talked about this not just being a hockey team. They're trying to build character into the lives of these young men. And the sacrifice that their parents have made, and now I see the sacrifice that these coaches and managers make in terms of raising funds, and all kinds of time is spent, poured into the lives of most of these guys who would never dream of playing pro. Once or twice something happens, but there's a lot of time and energy, or friends that surround these people. This doesn't happen by itself. What is true for athletics is true in the church and is true in the scriptures. Who's the gold medal apostle? Paul. Not from a, you know, from a human perspective. He's the guy we see. He's the guy who swims the pool. But that does not happen. Christianity does not expand by Paul alone. They're undergirding him, acting as, we might say, his tentacles, are a host of people. In shifting metaphors a little bit, in the Academy Awards, they award best actor and best actress. But I always like to pay attention also to the best supporting actor, the best supporting actress, because a film is nothing unless everyone is doing their part. Not always easy to find the supporting actor, but we all want to be the star. But it's so significant. So it is again in the scriptures. This morning we want to talk about a couple that acted in the best supporting role, we might say, of the Apostle Paul and all that that benefited both to him and to the church in general. All right, as we often would be talking about sort of minor characters, they pop up and we realize how significant these minor characters actually are. Acts chapter 18 is where we first encounter them. Paul and his associates are on their second missionary journey. And we pick up the story as they are leaving Athens. They have been there, and Paul has had conversations on Mars Hill. That's in the previous account, and now they move on from there, and they come to Corinth. And so we're in chapter 18 of Acts. I want to read the whole thing to set the context, because they appear at the beginning, they appear in the middle, and they appear at the end. So the whole context of Acts chapter 18, as we talk about Aquila and Priscilla, makers of tents. And that's all most of us are, right? We're tent makers. Well, you change the occupation. And I won't go around and ask you, but you know, Glenn, flyer of planes. Lori, flyer of planes. Katie, teacher of kids. What else we know here? Kevin, supervisor of tenants, among other things. Greg, doer of nothing. No, he's retired. I'm sorry, you know, I can't gonna resist that, right? Acts 18. After this, having met on Mars Hill. Paul left Athens and went to Corinth. This is where we find our couple. And he found a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome, and he went to see them. And because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them and worked, for they were tent makers by trade. And he reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath and tried to persuade Jews and Greeks. When Silas and Timothy arrived from Macedonia, Paul was occupied with the word, testifying to the Jews that the Christ was Jesus. And when they opposed and reviled him, he shook out his garments and said to them, "Your blood be on your own hands. I am innocent. From now on, I will go to the Gentiles." He left there and went to the house of a man named Titius Justus, a worshiper of God. His house was next door to the synagogue. Crispus, the ruler of the synagogue, believed in the Lord together with his entire household. And many of the Corinthians, hearing Paul, believed and were baptized. The Lord said to Paul one night in a vision, "Do not be afraid, but go on speaking and do not be silent, for I am with you, and no one will attack you to harm you, for I have many in this city who are my people." And he stayed a year and 6 months teaching the word of God among them. And while in Galilee, O proconsul of Achaia, the Jews made a united attack on Paul and brought him before the tribunal, saying, "This man is persuading people to worship God contrary to the law." But when Paul was about to open his mouth, Gallio said to the Jews, "If it were a matter of wrongdoing or vicious crime, O Jews, I would have reason to accept your complaint. But since it is a matter of questions about words and names in your own law, see to it yourselves. I refuse to be a judge of these things." And he drove them from the tribunal. And they all seized Sosthenes, the ruler of the synagogue, and beat him in front of the tribunal. But Gallio paid no attention to any of this. After this, Paul stayed many days longer and then took leave of the brothers and set sail for Syria, and with him Priscilla and Aquila. At Cenchrea, he had cut his hair, for he was under a vow, and they came to Ephesus, and he left them there. But he himself went into the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. But when they asked him to stay a longer period, he declined. But on taking leave of them, he said, "I will return to you if God wills," and he set sail from Ephesus. And when he had landed at Caesarea, he went up and greeted the church and then went down to Antioch. And spending some time there, he departed and went from one place to the next through the region of Galatia and Phrygia, strengthening all the disciples. Now a Jew named Apollos, a native of Alexandria, came to Ephesus. He was an eloquent man, competent in the scriptures. He had been instructed in the way of the Lord. And being fervent in spirit, he spoke and taught accurately the things concerning Jesus, though he knew only the baptism of John. He began to speak boldly in the synagogue, but when Priscilla and Aquila heard him, they took him and explained to him the way of God more accurately. And when he wished to cross to Achaia, the brothers encouraged him and wrote to the disciples to welcome him. And when he arrived, he greatly helped those who through grace had believed. For he powerfully refuted the Jews in public, showing by the scriptures that the Christ was Jesus. Four things regarding Aquila and Priscilla, makers of tents. Seems to be kind of vanilla kind of stuff here, but I think there's more here than originally meets the eye. If we really take a look at this couple and do a little digging, you'll find out a few more things as well. So, four things this morning. Number one, as is obvious, I would have you see their camaraderie with Paul. Their camaraderie with Paul. Back to the beginning of chapter 18, Paul, again, he comes to Corinth. A little background on this town. Corinth was a Greek port city, not that far from Athens. Corinth had a rather, what we might call, lurid reputation. Corinth was a naughty town. If any city in the ancient Greek world would have been known for its rather off-color context, it would have been Corinth. They call, I think, Vegas Sin City. That's Corinth. It was Sin City. In fact, in that day, the term Corinth was used to actually describe people who were of low moral value. Those people were said to Corinthianize, or they were Corinthianizing meant that you were, that's kind of a Hugh Hefner kind of term, if you know what I mean. Corinth was filled with idolatry and immorality, perhaps best known for the temples to the gods Apollos, Poseidon, and the goddess Aphrodite, or Venus. The temple to Venus stood on a hill outside of town that housed 1,000 temple prostitutes. Corinth was a port city, and so you would have sailors from all over the world who would land in Corinth, and up they would make their way to practice their religion, we might say. This was Corinth. And it is to this town that Paul comes. As is his custom, verse 2, he seeks out the Jews first, always to the Jews. And he encounters here in Corinth, we don't know how the connections work, the word of mouth, that kind of thing. He encounters a man by the name of Aquila. His name means eagle. If that means anything, and we will see as we work our way through their lives, this couple, that they do fly like an eagle. They make their way around. So Aquila, it says he's originally from Pontus, so he's not even a local. He's not a local by any means. In fact, he's in Ephesus because he's been moved around even unwillingly. Pontus is on the north coast of Turkey, bordering the Black Sea. If you want to kind of give a bit of a geography lesson, you go to your church maps and you will find it. In the back of your Bible, that's where he's originally from. But it further tells us that although that is his home, that's not where he came from in terms of landing in Ephesus. He had recently come to Corinth because the Jews had recently been expelled from Rome by the emperor. And so he's not even here by choice. His wife is also named. Her name is Priscilla. Paul refers to her by her more formal name in his letters. We'll get there in just a moment, but he refers to her as Prisca, P-R-I-S-C-A, a more formal, Priscilla is a gentler, more common name that like Robert and Bob, or I guess more in some of the Eastern European countries, Alexander is Sasha. That's that idea. Okay, so this is her more familiar name, Priscilla. Interestingly, that the name Prisca was actually the name of a great family in Rome, for whatever that's worth. And there's some suggest that she may actually have been connected to some wealth and to some prestige in terms of who she was as a lady. Nothing I'm going to rest my salvation on here, but you know, it's interesting just sort of to surmise. The other thing that again would be noted is that they always are referred to as a couple, never individually. That's interesting. They're a team, and they're always connected, and there's stuff to be learned there. Some authors even talk about them being a real an example of what marriage is, right? They're never individual. They're always joint, right? They're a Glenn and Carol, right? Kevin and Andrea, right? I could go around, right, and refer to any of you who are married. You're a team. And that's how they are seen and always referred to in the scriptures. Always together. I'll talk more about her in just a moment. Now they had been driven out of Rome. This is historical fact. In AD 49 or 50, secular historians refer to this, and I quote from one of the commentators, this was probably a result of a dissension and disorder in the Jewish community at Rome, resulting from the introduction of Christianity into one or more of the synagogues of the city. And there are secular historians who actually refer to the unrest in the Jewish community with respect to a certain individual who was probably referring to Christ being the sore point in the Jewish community discord. And so they're all thrown out because of the problem that they're creating. So they're, as a result of this, they get deported from Rome. And perhaps Aquila and Priscilla were part of this movement, this discord. They're perhaps the Christians. We don't know exactly when they come to Christ, but anyways, they're part of this deporting from Rome. Be that as it may, Paul finds them in Corinth and goes to see them. Perhaps they're already leaders of a young church in this city. We don't know, but here we are introduced to them. Verse 3 tells us that he ends up staying with them, or the reason that he meets up with them, because not that they're the leaders of the church, at least we don't see that yet, but because they are of the same trade. They're what is called here tent makers. A Pharisee was always expected to have a trade. You, as a Pharisee, you know, which Paul was at one time, you were not expected, or it was not, it was frowned upon for you to take money for being a scriptural teacher. You should have a trade on the side whereby you were earning your income. And so that's where Paul had learned his trade. And his, he comes from Tarsus, and so it's very probable that his father was also a tent maker. That was a general broad category in terms of people who worked with leather. So whether they were exactly tents or some other leather kind of fashion, that's neither here nor there. But Paul would have learned it from his father, and as a Pharisee, this would have been his trade. And he meets these other people who are also involved in the tent business, in the leather business, and they connect, and he stays at their place, perhaps using some of their equipment, I don't know. But that's how they're introduced to Paul. In fact, Paul is often referred to as working with his own hands so that he doesn't create a problem for the church, so that he never wants them to think that he's only in religion for the money. That's important. And isn't that often a problem, even in our modern culture, where sometimes people's reputation are just destroyed because of their wealth? I look at some of these televangelist guys, and you see the properties and the boats and the planes and stuff that they own. It leaves a bad taste in people's mouths. Now, Paul talks about those who are involved, that they're worth the bread that they earn in doing what they do, but this can turn out to be a real problem. But Paul really wants to make sure that this is never part of a problem that he has with the people to whom he goes. 1 Thessalonians 2 and verse 9. Remember, brothers, our labor and toil. We work night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you while we proclaimed to you the gospel of God. 2 Thessalonians, same church, chapter 3, verse 8, nor did we eat anyone's bread without paying for it, but with toil and labor we worked night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you. Right, so Paul wanted to really make sure that there was no mistaking why he was doing what he was doing. So that's why he's involved in tent making, while he meets these other tent makers. But that's not all that would tie them together. This couple would now become a critical support staff for the Apostle Paul. Verse 18, the story is picked up when Paul leaves Ephesus, Corinth. After this, it says, Paul stayed many days longer and took leave of the brothers. He's there here for about a year and a half. Seems to be living with Priscilla and Aquila. So would have gotten to know them quite well. Would have had what? Opportunity to what? Disciple them. He's living with them. They are believers, we will see in just a moment. And so it is interesting how God puts people together. Because what will Paul need when he leaves? Leaders. People who are trained. Imagine the Apostle Paul living with you for a year and a half. Right. Good stuff. Verse 18. He stayed many days longer than took leave of the brothers and set sail for Syria. It's across the water. And with him, who comes with him now? Priscilla and Aquila. He does not leave them in Corinth. We don't know what the reasons are, but they accompany Paul now on his journey. It's in Crete, he cut his hair. I won't get into that. And when they came to Ephesus, he left them there. So he has a specific purpose for this couple. They're not to stay in Corinth. He can use them in Ephesus. And he leaves them in Ephesus after he leaves Ephesus. They now join him. They join, I call this Apostle Paul Missionary Enterprises, Inc. They're his couple team members and key people in the church now in Ephesus. It would be a long and lasting relationship. Go over to Romans chapter 16. I'm going to be doing a little flipping here. Romans chapter 16. Verse 3. He's writing to the church in Rome. We will get to here in just a bit, but I just wanted to see what he says about them as he refers to them. He says, greet Prisca, that's his way of referring to her, and Aquila, my fellow workers in Christ Jesus. That's who they are. They're working with Paul. They're his representatives, his fellow workers, as he takes them now to the city of Ephesus. All right? To say that, again, lay people are vital to the church's ministry. These are not pros. I think especially here in the West, that we churches has gotten quite professional in some of its, especially as it gets larger. And we got a pastor for this, and we got a pastor for that, and we got a pastor, and then I look at some staff and go, there's 30 people on staff here. Excuse me. And I get that, but it's some easy, I think to some degree that's why smaller churches are better, because you can really be the church. So everybody's got to be involved for this to happen. I remember when we went into mission, how many years ago was that now? 25 years ago. And we had a building, but we had no people. And there's no way on my own we're going to... And so you're just reliant on everybody. How did it go? I mean, it took off, but because everybody's pulling. And this is how the early church worked. And these tent makers are pulling. They're part of it. This is not a bunch of, you know, people who come from, you know, some seminary who have been well trained, and we get them now to kind of pull all the strings. No, no, no. It's a ground up enterprise, the church. And I kind of like that. It's just a note. Their camaraderie with Paul, their fellow workers with Paul, they're all part of the same enterprise. Fellow workers. I might be the pastor of this church. Fellow workers. Together, we're in this task. Nobody's higher than anybody else. We just have different jobs to do, but we're all pulling in the same direction, serving the same Lord. Whatever your occupation is. Okay, so that's our introduction to this couple. Two, their capacity in the scriptures. Their capacity in the scriptures. So Paul leaves them in Ephesus in verse 19, then we hop down to verse 24. After Paul leaves, the camera pans back to Ephesus. And who's in Ephesus? Aquila and Priscilla. Another teacher comes to town. His name is Apollos. He's a good teacher. He's a gifted orator. He's smart. He can refute the Jews. He's a Christian. Eloquent, knowledgeable, passionate. The kind of guy they used to have tent meetings. This is the guy you'd invite. He's riveting as an orator. But his understanding is incomplete. Remember, this is the early church. Not everybody knows everything yet. They don't have New Testaments. They have letters and they have traveling speakers. And Apollos comes into town. Enter who? Have you picked up something to this point? No, what do you mean? Okay, let's go back. In chapter 18, verse 2, Paul finds a Jew named Aquila with his wife Priscilla. Okay, now down to verse 18. After this, Paul stayed many days longer and took leave of the brothers and set sail for Syria, and with him, Priscilla and Aquila. Anything strike you? Their names are reversed in terms of the order. Now, in verse 26, he began to speak boldly in the synagogue, but when Priscilla and Aquila heard him, she's mentioned first again. That's somewhat unusual. Why? Of the six times this couple is mentioned in the scriptures, her name is mentioned first four of the six times. His name is mentioned first two of the six. So there's conjecture on this. Why? My hunch. Number one, she's no tag-along. And in fact, I would suggest perhaps, especially now in terms of their connection here with Apollos, that she may very well be the more astute of the two theologically. That she's not just an extra. In fact, her being named first might suggest that she may have more, and maybe from the family in which she came from. He's just a tent maker. She may have come from a higher educated kind of background, and so there's an elevation here. Perhaps she's even the one who talks to Apollos in terms of helping him along in the scriptures and those sorts of things. And so this is quite interesting here, that in some ways she takes the lead. But with this caveat, the lead is never absent of her husband's leadership in the home. So even though she may be leading, it's never apart from him. Priscilla and Aquila. It's not just Priscilla, husband fly a kite, you dummy. So I just find this quite interesting as you just read into how they are introduced to us. A lead, a spokesperson perhaps, she's mentioned first, especially in the context with Apollos, but not on her own. It doesn't say, well, and Priscilla went and talked to Apollos. No, it's always the two of them. She never seems to undercut his authority. Just to let you think about that. Anyway, they're able to fill in the blanks for Apollos. Theologically astute, able to teach, they correct, they assist, both of them. So Paul has left this church in capable hands. He doesn't need to parachute in. He's not a parachute apostle. Right, parachute parents, right? How's my kid doing in college? That kind of thing. Well, they're good. Anyway, he has to trust them, but they've been trained because they were spending a year and a half with him. I would also have you note that I'm not sure the ESV makes this as clear. When Priscilla and Aquila heard him, they took him. In some translations, and this is in the original text, they took him aside. They don't castigate him in front of everybody else. Hey, make a big public display of. They meet with him privately and to help him understand Christian baptism in a private. This is something even to be learned about how we approach people that maybe don't have all their facts quite straight. Don't embarrass them. And so that's what they do. They help Apollos. I would have you note by way of application here that we desperately need lay leaders who are well versed in the scriptures. This isn't just the job of the professional. They're able to help Apollos, who in fact would be better equipped to do what he's gifted to do. But they're behind the scenes people making sure everything is good and that they're not dumb. But they're also not the quote-unquote official leader, trained professional, and yet they are very useful. The job of the scriptures isn't just for the pastor. We all are to be equipped in our knowledge and our understanding so that we can help people and disciple people. And that's exactly what they're doing. They were discipled by Paul, and now they disciple Apollos, who himself would go on to bigger and better things. Verse 27 and 28, when he crosses to Achaia, the brothers encouraged him and wrote to the disciples to welcome him. And when he arrived, he greatly helped those who through grace had believed, for he powerfully refuted the Jews in public. Who helped them? Aquila and Priscilla. Right? Maybe he even quoted them. So our job is, other people are equipped, we help them. We're just encouraging one another to be all that we can be. That's what they're doing in the church. Their capacity in the scriptures. Thirdly, and we already have seen this, their concern for the church. Their concern for the church. If anything, as has already been demonstrated, Aquila and Priscilla are known as church people. As we have seen, after Paul left Corinth, they accompanied him to Ephesus, where he left them to oversee the church, and they help. In a letter to the Corinthian church, which they had left a few years later, in roughly 56 AD, but this is now a few years on, Paul is writing from Ephesus in 1 Corinthians chapter 16. He's writing from Ephesus to the church in Corinth. That's where he met them. And in verse 19, we read, "The churches of Asia send you greetings. Aquila and Prisca, together with the church in their house, send you hearty greetings in the Lord." So they're still in Ephesus. They're helping in the church in Ephesus, and in fact, the church is meeting in their home in Ephesus. So they're prominent. They probably have a good business, and they would have a home that would be big enough to accommodate the local church. Leads us to believe that they are somewhat affluent, but also that the churches would have been quite small. 30, 40 people would have met in their meeting room in what would have been a larger church. And that's where the church met, at their place. They're not only well-versed in the scriptures, but they also give of their provisions for the church. They give what they have. They give what they can. Practiced hospitality. They are what we would call all in. All in. Now turn to Romans chapter 16. Romans chapter 16. Verse 3. Paul, we already read this. "Greet Prisca and Aquila, my fellow workers in Christ Jesus." Now look down to verse 5. "Greet also the church." He's writing to the church in Rome. This is a year or two later. Where's the church in Rome meeting? In their house. Oh, so now a few years later, they're no longer in Ephesus. For whatever reason, they're back in Rome. Probably the dangers have passed. And where's the church in Rome meeting? In whose house? Aquila and Priscilla. Interesting. Where they go becomes the meeting place for the church. 2 Timothy 4:19. 2 Timothy 4:19. This is Paul's last letter. Paul is in Rome now. Roughly 67 AD, Rome had burned and the Christians were being blamed. Timothy, to whom he's writing, is in Ephesus. 4th last verse that Paul pens. "Greet who?" Verse 19. "Prisca and Aquila, and the household of Onesiphorus." Where are Aquila and Priscilla? They're back in Ephesus. Don't know why and why they're back there again, but there they are. They pop up everywhere. Looks like they had fled and returned to the hosting of the church here again. And they are resilient. They bloom where they're planted. Always association with the church. They're church people. Where you found them, you found a church. Lesson for us. Increasingly, especially this was not helped by the COVID age, people think they can do church, and I mentioned this before, at home. Sorry if you're watching from home, but this is an exhortation. Christianity was never meant to be a Lone Ranger religion. me and Jesus and the TV screen when I have time. That's not ever the way it was designed. There is no Christianity apart from the local church, as Aquila and Priscilla demonstrate for us. Wherever we happen to live, whether it's here or if we move, we find a church. For Aquila and Priscilla, it was Corinth, it was Ephesus, it was Rome, back to Ephesus, but always the church. Because you can't do this without the church, without a body of believers with you. And it's not just about what they can do for you. It's you're meant to not just come to church for what you can get, but for what you can give. This church doesn't need me. Who do you think you are? It's so selfish. It's not about you. We need you and whatever it is that you can contribute. That's what they show us. We move, we find a church. We are a body. And we give to that body our resources, our abilities. We contribute as we are able. That's Aquila and Priscilla. Or if you like, Priscilla and Aquila. Four, and with this we're through. None of this is rocket science, but I would have you see there ultimately is their commitment to Christ. Their commitment to Christ. Back to Romans 16. Romans 16, where they are mentioned. We skipped over verse 4. We were here before. Greet Prisca and Aquila, their fellow co-workers. Greet the church in their house, but in the middle. Greet a Prisca and Aquila who risked their necks for my life. To whom not only I give thanks, but all the churches of the Gentiles give thanks as well. Everybody knows who they are. And the fact that they put their lives on the line for the cause. They risked their lives. Risked their necks, Paul writes, for my life. Paul always is getting into trouble, right? But it's easy to stand back and no, but they got involved. It's risky sometimes to help people for the cause of Christ. I don't want, let other person go, to take the beating. No. They're with them. Again, they are committed. They are all in. Doesn't say exactly what situation Paul is referring to, but they stand with him, which is ultimately the cause of the gospel, no matter what it costs. This was often the reality for early Christians. And as time moves on, increasingly this will be a part of the reality of the life of believers today. Opposition, cost, standing up against evil. Standing up for Christ, never mind against evil. He's not that popular. And the authorities are coming after believers. Who would be on the front lines? They would. That's where the church meets, in their house. It's putting yourself out there. The bullseye is on their house, on them. It takes something to stand up, be counted, which they were willing to do. This is a couple that is modeling the dedication to the things of Christ. This is just who they are. Lord, give us more Aquilas and Priscillas. More Priscillas and Aquilas. Unsung heroes of the Bible. Best supporting actor and actress best actor and actress in a supporting role. They gave themselves to Christ because he had given himself for them. Which is where we want to end this morning.